Soundworks.
Soundworks.
From PRI.
I felt this sense of kind of hate brewing, and art was a way to challenge that in such a kind of positive way. And when I saw the power of that, I was like, wow, I mean, this is how I can have a voice.
Welcome to Radio Ambulante, Unscripted, a part of Soundworks from PRI. I'm Daniel Alarcón. If you don't know Fabiana Rodriguez by name, you may still have seen her work. She's one of the visual artists most intimately involved with the immigrants' rights movement. And her art seems to be everywhere. At marches, on college campuses, stenciled on the walls and vacant lots in East Oakland, where she's from. The fact that these pieces are so easily reproduced is part of the point. Fabiana wants to spark conversation. She wants to provide templates for others, students, activists, people from all walks of life, to play with images and make them their own. So to begin, I asked Fabiana to describe one of her more iconic pieces, the butterfly.
The butterfly is something that I was observing, and it was in different immigration spaces. It had been used in Arizona. And initially, believe it or not, I was really kind of turned off by it because I'm a feminist artist. And then when I saw how people reacted to it, and I noticed especially how children would react to it, and that for me was, you know, when I saw that, I was like, you know what, I really want to give this more life. I want it to be everywhere. And I really fell in love with it as a metaphor. What I did is I put two faces in it that are looking at themselves as a way to also say that these can be two nations or two families. In the wings.
Yeah.
And then I wanted to provide the cultural tools so that people could participate and create their own butterflies.
Fabi, when did you decide you wanted to be an artist?
I knew I wanted to be an artist since I was a child, I would say 8 to 10 years old. I was really gifted in the arts, so much that I would win awards for kids. I mean, I was on Univision for winning the drawing awards. I would win the library awards. And art was something I kind of did as a hobby because my mom realized that I really loved to do it. And so she enrolled me in a lot of programs in the Fruitvale where I grew up. And I was trained by some of the most prolific Chicano muralists in the Bay Area in things like screen printing and murals. And it was very important for me to learn from Chicanos and from Nicaraguenses who were also working in the Fruitvale, because it gave me an idea that art was about reflecting what I saw right in my community.
It seems to me like there's a tension in the art world. There's like art that is part of an activist agenda or activist movement, and then there's so-called fine arts that are kind of devoid of explicit politics or stripped of that in a different way. And and I was wondering, as you developed your practice as an artist, how much did that tension weigh on you, and did you feel pulled in one direction or the other, and how did you make the choice to do the kind of art that you ended up doing?
Yeah, well, actually, I mean, I didn't even know that there was an art world out there that would welcome me. And I think that, you know, one of the biggest kind of secrets or the white elephant in the room with the art world is just the sheer racial inequality that exists at all levels, everything from who is attending the schools, the art schools, to who's teaching. My education around the arts and where I saw it most powerfully used was to challenge some of the political issues that were happening when I was growing up, and one of them being Proposition 187.
Right. So how old were you when Prop 187 came out?
I was 15.
Okay. And did your local, like, Fruitvale High School mobilize and get super involved?
Absolutely. I mean, I think this is where, for me, it really clicked how powerful art was, because there was a flyer that was being put up all over our neighborhood that said, "Who's the illegal alien pilgrim?" And it has an Aztec guy wrinkling these papers. And it really, I was like, whoa, like, I have never seen anything that challenged whiteness like that, and that challenged. But I felt this sense of kind of hate brewing. And art was a way to challenge that in such a kind of positive way. And when I saw the power of that, I was like, wow, I mean, this is how I can have a voice.
Do you think that, you know, if we're 30 years from now and we're looking mm-hmm. back at this moment, certain images are going to survive.
what do you think is going to last? Like, if we're curating this 30 years from now, what are we going to see on the walls of a gallery or a museum?
Well, first, we're going to definitely see the concept of the physical wall be broken down. And I think some of the most interesting projects, both, you know, as performance pieces or as visual pieces, have the wall has crumbled. The wall doesn't exist anymore.
What do you mean by
or
that?
Or the wall, like I've seen, you know, performance art where people are doing volleyball over the wall, or where people are exchanging something over the wall, or even, you know, civil disobedience where people are hugging each other through the wall and crying in each other's arms because they can't be with each other. I think first that the concept of the wall is so unique to the U.S.-Mexico border and so symbolic of everything that's wrong with immigration policy, that is one kind of element that I see over and over again continuing to show up in the work. And so I think that that's something that we would see even continuing 30 years from now, and I think evolved on a whole nother level.
Aesthetically, there's been some development.
Mm-hmm.
Building upon the legacy of, say, the Chicano muralists or the graphic arts of the Black Panther Party, or, you know, a lot of the iconography that we know that had an activist bent a generation ago. But some of that iconography has been transformed. Some of it has been rejected. Some of it has been improved upon. I'd love it if you could describe to me aesthetically, in terms of the art, what's happened. Like, how is the art pushed into it is now?
Well, first, we have entirely different tools we're working with. I mean, we have digital tools at our disposal, which means that art, the way in which art can respond to an urgency of, say, what's happening at the Arizona border or what's happening with a deportation, has the ability to reach audiences and viewers so much quicker than it did in the past.
Because of the viral sharing.
Because of the sharing, but also it both becomes a reflection of the cultural moment as much as a tool to shape that moment. So when youth in 2010 began to come out, undocumented youth mm-hmm. started coming out as undocumented and unafraid, this was a challenge to even, you know, the previous narratives that the immigration movement had said, because they were saying, yes, we're undocumented and we are now going to tell you we're undocumented. We're going to have rallies to tell you. We're going to put it on YouTube. We're going to put it on Facebook. And it created this kind of mass domino effect where youth in different cities were coming out with their stories. That impacted the art in the sense where the art was very unapologetic. It was no longer about just saying we are workers, not criminals. It was more about saying we're not going anywhere.
It seems that the challenge then is, how do you make art that also builds bridges?
Right. I that's correct. I think also, I mean, as an artist, this is where I think an artist has to be an artist. And that is that I don't believe that our content must always be driven by the policy moment. Sometimes we have to remember our basic humanity. I mean, that is art is a bridge to that. It's a bridge to remind people that we experience the same sadness and joys, and that we are also human beings. And I mean, when I see the art come out, I just think to myself, how can I make this so that more people participate? How can I make these tools available to folks who are not immigrants, whose families have been here multiple generations? How can I speak to white families and Black families and Asian families so that these tools are also used by a multitude of people? And that's something that I think is much more relevant to me, is how do we incorporate the creation of culture with an end goal? Because I don't think we're just making culture, just making stuff just to make it. I mean, I think that there's a thinking behind why these tools are needed and why they will uplift stories, and therefore thinking with a long-term goal of what we want to shift is key to my practice.
Fabiana Rodriguez is an artist and activist from Oakland, California. This interview was engineered and produced by Claire Mullen, with editing from Silvia Viñas. Special thanks to our production intern, Diana Buendia, and our program associate, Lori Ignacio. Carolina Guerrero is our executive director. Thanks also to KALW in San Francisco. Radio Ambulante Unscripted is supported in part by PRI's New Voices Fund, bringing new perspectives and personalities to public media. Donors to the fund include Maureen and Michael Rutgers and the Sarah and Evan Williams Foundation. Radio Ambulante tells the stories of Latin America. To hear more, please visit our website, radioambulante.org. I'm Daniel Alarcón. Thanks for listening.
Soundworks.
Soundworks.
From PRI.